rolling. Welcome back to the show, Mikey Bowser.
Nice. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, buddy. It's been a while.
I like to change it up because after all these many episodes, it gets kind of old just saying welcome to Out of the Blank podcast. But for the new listeners that might come across you for the first time, what about you? Would you like to tell the audience?
Well, I'm a paranormal investigator and researcher, part of Bump in the Night Society. I'm one of the lead investigators. We do a mix of things. We've been hosting a lot of public investigations lately where we bring people on. I like those, but I kind of like doing the private investigations where you get more personal with the energy of a location and you can kind of have stuff, kind of scare you a little bit.
Wait, so not like through social media where you just like do a live video and have people get brought in, but you just actually bring people off the street into. I'm guessing your screen went out.
It did, dude. I don't know.
I saw it when you weren't looking at me. I was like, yep, he's like a blind person now. He's just kind of looking off to the side.
How do I fix this shit, dude?
Technical
I always
issues.
have technical issues here.
Well, if it comes back on, we'll just continue and I'll let you know I'm still here by making a noise every 5 seconds. But would you like to let us know what do you do when you do the public investigations? I don't think we've talked about this yet.
Yeah, we usually bring people. It depends on the location, like the size of it, but we'll sell tickets and essentially we show people how to use our equipment, talk about some of our theories. Usually the host of the location will do a history tour. So it's a little less in depth than doing the private ones where we still film, but I'm less inclined to be as strict as I am during the private ones. Because I mean, ultimately, everybody has different goals. My goal doing this is to kind of figure out what we're interacting with. Because I kind of question, like, the common hypothesis is that we're interacting with energy from the deceased. I question that. I don't know if it's ghosts. There's a couple things that I've been trying to do through research. One of the experiments I'm doing is trying to see if I can develop a haunting and create my own haunting. So what I'm doing is, and I can't do it every night because I'm not home every night, but I go to that corner of my basement at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as many days as I can if I'm home or if I'm not, sleeping. And I say the same phrase three times, and I'm going to do that for an entire year. Then the following year, I'm going to put a digital voice recorder, or I actually picked up, it's kind of cool. It's a retro Panasonic cassette tape recorder. I might run both of them and see if I can pick up the phrase that I'm saying, or I was saying the prior year. And then if it is successful, the following year, I'm going to try to use my spirit box to see if I can interact with myself.
That's a good hypothesis or theory or test that you're doing, but I'm questioning on one thing. What about the number of football dads that are at home every Sunday when football season is and they're screaming the F word at the TV? Could that be possible too?
It is possible. I feel like I think anything that you do ritualistically can develop an imprint, an energy imprint. And that's kind of what a lot of the hypothesis is in the field is that they call one of the things is a residual haunting, where it's like you can't interact with it. It's just something at certain times of the day or certain elemental factors, like if it's, a thunderstorm or, something to that extent, or some people even believe in, the astronomy, like the stars are aligned a certain way, that it'll replay a memory from the past. And we've run into those where we've had stuff come through that wasn't intelligent. You couldn't interact with it. It would be like two voices coming through having a conversation or a door slamming at the same time every night, or not every night, but on certain nights throughout the year. So I think that that's possible with a football game. I just don't think those people are trying to see if it's coming through.
Look, you can only watch the Steelers lose so many times before you start putting an impression into the building.
All right. I'll give you that one. But hey, we got a new system. We got a new quarterback. We got two quarterbacks. I think at least the two quarterbacks we got are better than the last ones that we've had.
Well, do you believe in any of the astrological stuff that goes on or any of that? Because I probably would surprise you by saying I'm in that boat a little bit more. Not necessarily like you got to read a horoscope to be, I don't believe in that so much. But like, for the instance, we know like when lunar eclipses happen or when the moon's at its most full, there is a large amount of emotions and things that happen that go on with women who either might be pregnant, they might give birth a little bit early, something of that, because that is the way that the moon works with our tides and just works with water. We're 75% water. So I think it's more than that, to be honest with you.
I think it's like 95, isn't it?
But yeah, so when you really look at like those small things that we start to pick up later, that's based in more scientific data rather than the, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, if there's a super moon or a blue moon, I mean, the whole environment looks different. It either looks brighter, like it's daylight when it's nighttime, or there's something else. I don't believe it's like, what is it, during the pandemic, everyone thought that there was a certain race that was going to get superpowers when the super moon hit. Do you remember that?
I didn't hear that, but that's interesting.
But it was like the helter-skelter theory, basically. But there was like, there's obviously a line of how far it goes. But when you look, and especially this is a good question for you, which is that when you're doing so much in the paranormal community, you're coming across certain teams, and certain teams have certain members that have certain attributes or what they bring to the team. Like everyone brings something. I think April probably a little bit falls into this category, but be able to sense things or pick up energies a little bit different. Garrett probably would have as well in the group. So, I mean, do you look at that a little bit? Do you have any kind of belief or wonderment in that?
Yeah. I mean, as far as the astronomy side, I mean, I'm open-minded to anything. And I do think, like you mentioned with the moon, I think that's more a physical thing, where it's the gravitational pull. So that obviously has an effect on humans, and it can have an effect on energy as well, because we are essentially water, energy, and, you know, a vessel. So I believe in a possibility. That's the thing. That's why I switched up. I used to always use the word theory, but I've been lately using hypothesis, because we have no concrete evidence. Everything, like even the tools that we use, a lot of them are subjective. So that's why I always kind of try to be skeptical, and I've said it before on here, it's like one of my catchphrases, have a skeptical brain, but with an open mind. So I do think that's a possibility. Now, as far as like astrological signs, I mean, possible. I'm not really big into that side, but the astronomy, I think could play a part and be a variable in affecting energy on our planet. As far as people having, you know, extraordinary powers, yeah, I think it's quite possible. I know last time I was on here, I remember the old hypothesis that we only used, I forget, like a small portion of our brain, but you corrected me and said that I don't remember what the percentage was that you threw out.
Yeah, we don't just use 20%. We probably use more to like 65% of our brain.
Yeah. So that leaves 35% of the brain that's potentially untapped. Now, I know watching your show, pretty avid fan, you did have, as far as like psychics go, I know you had a couple episodes with some psychic debunkers. I will say, you know, as far as the powers go, I mean, I've seen, especially, Garrett, do some pretty crazy things. I think I told you about my first paranormal experience on one of the prior episodes. It was with him, way before I even investigated. And it kind of deterred me from investigating. So I do believe in that being a possibility, but I also believe it's pretty saturated with people that may have mental things going on and they believe that they're doing certain things. But that could also create an aggregor where if they believe it enough that, you know, it could come to fruition. But I think a lot of it is mental health. And we see that a lot in the field too, when we do private investigations. or residential investigations, where we're trying to go into a house, determine what if there is something there, and then see if we can maybe help the people either rid it or learn to live with it. A lot of those kind of, like, we've been kind of steering away from a lot of those just because a lot of them we've determined it's more a mental health thing than it is a supernatural instance.
Why do you think there's such a large amount of audience people or people that are involved that have mental health kind of issues or a mental health thing, I would say? I mean, that's like that with any of the topics. You can look at like some of the craziest ones out there, even some of the real historically factual ones that are backed up that historians will teach about, people just get obsessed with. I mean, it can lead you down the rabbit hole of conspiracies, obviously. But every community or every large following, the Frank Sinatra following, all these JFK following, there's always this area where there's like, it attracts people so much that you obviously will get a wide net of people, but there's the mental health thing that does come up. Like if someone sends you 50 messages, like this person might just have something going on. But I don't know if that's because of the isolating factors. If we take paranormal investigation, how much time do you spend alone? How much time do you spend, whether it's in a group, but how much time do you spend in dark places? How much time do you believe in something? And then you're kind of trying to manifest it yourself. You know, you start kind of creating your own paranoia a little bit. Now, I don't fall 100% with the skeptics, because there is a lot of stuff where I'm like, you can't explain that. And it's not just rationally described as Occam's razor or whatever they always toss out. There's something else there. So I never toss out the Bigfoot, the paranormal stuff. I think it's all very, very fascinating. And I've met some people that are logically sound that study the whole topic, and they'll tell you, yeah, there's just something else going on here, and I don't know what it is, but we're going to try our best to figure it out and put it in a measurable scale.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. And I don't necessarily think that these fields attract, people with mental health issues. I think mental health, now that it's really in the forefront, just in our society in general, I think that when you, even at work or, you know, anything, you know, your day job, there's people there that are struggling with mental health issues. I just think that these taboo subjects like supernatural, you know, paranormal, you know, cryptids, conspiracy, I think they're just still considered taboo amongst the general society, so that when people come in with mental health issues into the field, it's more, you know, visible, I guess I would say. And I think that it's not necessarily that there's more people that are being attracted to these subjects. I just think that everybody in the field has a voice, and their voices are being heard where they may not be heard in, you know, normal society.
I agree. I also think it's kind of like working an overnight shift. You know, there's just some people I work with, I'm like, oh, you don't know how to talk to people. Like, that's just how it is. I guess you must have worked this shift way too long. You forgot the ability to, like, hey, because most of the time you don't ever get to meet people. You're kind of in your own private sector besides a couple of people, depending on what shift you're working, really. But that overnight shift, you don't really, there's nobody that's out on the roads at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if you decide to stop at a gas station, you're not getting any conversation there. You know, so I just start wondering how many years, like, people that are involved. I mean, have you met people in the community that have been involved for like 20 something years? I mean, when did you get started, obviously? Like, how many years ago? And then, like, obviously you've met a lot of people. So I'm curious, when you meet the more experienced people, do they seem a little bit, not disconnected, but just a little bit more like out there than you might be just on some certain subjects?
I would say it's a case to case basis. I would say there's some people, I break it up regardless of experience. I break it up into several categories. I feel that there's paranormal social media influencers. They're going to go in, they're going to do live streams, whatever. And we do live streams too. But we try to, you know, we're also investigating. A lot of these people will go in and there's nothing wrong with it. They'll just go in. They may throw on a spirit box, throw on, a REM pod, which is a thing that measures electromagnetic force, and in different items, and they'll go off, but they don't really try to elaborate on why. Why is this going off? You know what I mean? And it's kind of just like for the views, like, and they'll also make things a little more dramatic. Like a noise will happen. I mean, you're in a lot of these places are really old buildings, so they're going to be subject to creaks and bangs that, you know, could be paranormal or could be just the building itself. A wind gust came through. But anytime there's a bang, and you'll see it on the TV shows too, they'll be like, oh my God, what was that? And a lot of people have that misconception. And that's why we do the Publix too, is because a lot of people have that misconception that it's the whole time you're hearing like all these noises and everyone's panicked and scared. And it's not like that. But you'll have social media influencers who, you know, are there just to be social media influencers, just like any other social media influencer. They just want to get views. They want to get likes. They get paid. A lot of them are very successful. That's their living. And there's nothing wrong with that. Then I say there's ghost hunters who kind of go in, they're similar to the social media influencer type where they'll investigate, use equipment, do this, do that, but they're not doing much research. They're not really elaborating on their evidence. They're just kind of putting a clip out there and that's about it. Then I feel like I kind of fall into this, category, which would be the paranormal investigator category, where you're more into maybe even paranormal researcher, investigator. That's what I usually say, where you're more into doing things that other people aren't doing because you have a goal, whether it's aligning your evidence that you collect during an investigation to the history of the location, or you're trying to elaborate and kind of discover what we're really interacting with. Like I said earlier, I don't necessarily think we're interacting with ghosts or spirits. One theory I have is that these locations just have energy at them. And I've actually talked to Garrett a lot about projections, where you're kind of going into a place, you know the history of the location, and you're projecting like, all right, I'm going into, let's say, Hillview Manor. We're going into Hillview Manor. We all know George, the maintenance man that worked there, haunts the basement in the boiler room. So we're going to go in there and we're going to try to talk to George. And we're projecting that George is going to interact with us. So is it really that energy that is there? Because it is haunted. There's energy at that location. It's one of my favorite places to investigate. Plus, it's pretty local, so that kind of helps out. But are we projecting our impression of what we're going to interact with the energy that's there? So that energy wants to interact with us, so it's going to present itself as George. Or if you go to other locations, this energy has been at this location this whole time and all this history happened, and this energy has no personification. It's just energy that's sitting there. And so it personifies itself from different people that have lived there throughout history. And maybe some had tragic endings, some didn't. I mean, going back to George, he didn't die at Hillview Manor. I don't know where he died, but he didn't die on site. Why is he haunting that boiler room? And that's why I'm doing my experiment in the basement, trying to create my own haunting, because I don't understand the fact either. If a person dies at a or doesn't die at a location, how are you interacting with their energy at that location intelligently? Is it that they died and parts of their energy went to different locations that were important to them? Is it that energy has been there the whole time and no one has been interacting with it? Is it that person has been in that location for so long that they left that impression there? And
how many times do you remember something that has no meaning, no positive, no negative feeling for you? I remember things that I literally just don't know why I remember it. Like, why is that so strong of a memory when I really don't remember having a good time or a bad time here? At least something that was so severe to the point that was like either really, really good or really, really bad. But I just have these random memories where I start wondering, maybe that's what it's like, you know, if you are attached to a spot, maybe it's because we just remember certain things, whether it's this place of severe pain that you experienced or severe good. But sometimes it can just be something that just left an impression in your mind, whether you picked up more details and your mind's remembering it more. I mean, You can only say coincidence so many times when you're asking a spirit box questions, and the light starts to go off after every single time you ask it a question. I mean, you can maybe explain it happening once, so that's just a coincidence. But it happening over and over again on a repetitive thing, and I've seen your videos, and I know you, where I know you wouldn't just be doing it for attention, to be like, okay, that's a little bit more than just, oh, random truck passed by and it picked up a signal. No, no, no. It's you're asking something out there, and it's responding in a way that it has to respond to be able to get in contact with you.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I believe there are coincidences, but there's also synchronicities. And that's what we kind of have to decipher, especially with the spirit box, because it is subject to radio bleed. I mean, none of the items that we use in investigation outside of our mind, and I'll say our cameras, and I'd say a digital voice recorder, but it can pick up your stomach growling, and or a teammate's stomach growling, or if you're doing a public and someone, you know, is not a seasoned investigator and their stomach growls or they sniffle or cough, like if you're not calling it out, then even that's subject to, you know, contamination. So none of these items are foolproof. So that's why I'm using different techniques. Like I'm trying to use bells. I recently bought a couple different bells. Obviously they could be subject to wind in the area. So you kind of trying to find a way to eliminate that variable.
Did you buy bells or chimes?
I bought bells because I felt chimes would probably be a little easier to be subject to wind.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, you said bells. Like, what bells subjected to wind are you?
I mean, it's possible. It'd have to be a big gust.
Are we talking about like a town crier bell? Like where you shake it
I
around?
Have two. I have
the
one
British
that's...
are coming. The British are coming.
Yeah. It's not that big. I have okay. One that you... It's attached to like a little wooden piece that's like this. The bell sits down, and then there's a metal thing that surrounds the bell. And obviously, it vibrates or anything, the bell will go up against that, and that's what causes the ringing. It's for doors, so you can, if it's a metal door, you can, you know, just click it right there because it has a magnet on it. So I have that one, and then I also have the hotel bells, the desk bells,
or
restaurant bells to get people's attention.
Service bell.
The service bell. I couldn't think of the name. But yeah, so I'm going to try to use those during investigations. But yeah, I think that's what nothing is foolproof. I mean, nothing in this world's foolproof, but I think we need to use different techniques to really be able to eliminate the variables so that you can know that for sure, like, okay, this happened outside of like seeing something or, you know, something coming through and growling at you with no equipment on. Or, you know, I always go back to the Bel Air House documentary, the voices that showed up on the camera that no equipment was on but no one heard it live. Outside of those moments, it's really, really hard because a lot of things are very subjective, even the spirit box, even though it's my favorite thing to do, unless it's super, super clear, there's still a possibility that, you know, you're interpreting what it's saying the wrong way. And that happens a lot live. And that's why one instance I'm going to put in the documentary and I'll talk about a little bit going back to projection is one of the clips I'm using was from we were guest hosts of a public investigation at Indiana State Sanitarium's convention in 2023. And I was reviewing a spirit box session that we did. And I think through the spirit box, it said Highland. But when I heard it live, I thought it said demon. And this isn't a place that I would think would have potential demonic energy. And I really question a lot of the places that supposedly have demonic energy in general. But I thought it said demon. And a lot of the people that were there thought it said demon. So we asked more questions. And then it came through clearly through the spirit box, demon, several times. Now, was that because I misinterpreted the initial one and it said Highland, but in my mind, I thought it said demon. So that energy's, you know, I'm projecting that out there. So that energy somehow knows that that's what I thought it said, and now it's coming through saying that. Is it coincidence? Or am I misinterpreting what the initial one said? And I thought it said Highland, but it's, you know, during the review, I'm thinking it says Highland, but it actually did say demon. It's just I'm not hearing it the right way.
Well, if you're believing or if you're going down the projection kind of road, do you have to look at consciousness and what our brains can do to be able to manipulate the environment around us?
Yeah, yeah. And that's going back to my experiment. That's exactly what I'm doing. So the word I picked is Mamma Mia, because I started it right after.
Dude, any ghost with self-respect ain't going to be saying that word.
Exactly. But no, I chose it because.
Did you do the accent too? Does the ghost have to do it like that?
Yeah, it's Mamma. I even do the Mamma Mia.
You pull out the chef hat and everything and the guy on the front of the pizza box.
Yeah, my son and I were watching Mario Brothers because I was trying to think of a word. I'm like, it's got to be something weird that, you know, normally wouldn't come through. And I was like, all right, you know, I've done stuff at my house before.
Unless an Italian plumber died in your basement, that ain't.
Yeah, I know.
That's not a common one that's going to be said.
I know. But or in the area. I mean, that's another thing that's kind of weird. Like, because I've done stuff in my basement before and I've told you about it in the past. No one's died, at least since the house was built. But we used to have a lot of stuff going on through the house. Fortunately, it's died down because I haven't been, you know, interacting with it. But it's weird that no one's died here, but, you know, we're still getting stuff. Like stuff would be moving around in my house and stuff. And I also did a spirit box and had a lot of intelligent responses through, and no one's died here, but just over maybe a block over, there's a mansion that used to be a hospital. And I think two blocks down that way, there's a cemetery. So is it possible that some of that energy is coming over to here?
I believe it. I mean, you have to think, if it is a cemetery, there's a lot of dead people buried over there. If you do, you know, that's probably ends up seeping down the street at some point. Gets in the water. Gotta be careful.
It gets in the water. That's actually a common hypothesis, is that places near water and can kind of get the energy going a little bit, especially if the water's flowing, because that'll create energy in itself.
Why do you think most of the investigations happen at night, not during the day?
I think a lot of it is a misconception that people think that it has to be dark and scary for activity to occur. I can tell you that is not the case. I've had plenty of interactions during the daytime. I do think that a lot of people do it because it eliminates a lot of variables. Because if you're in a well-lit place, you're less vulnerable. And you're looking at like all these different colors and everything. So your mind might be a little all over the place, where if you're in the dark and you're isolated, like there's nothing else that's going to distract you. Because I think that's one thing too, is that I think that paranormal and supernatural things happen all the time. It's just people don't look for it.
That is a little bit more on the lines of like that extrasensory ability that I mentioned earlier about some people have this, they just don't have their guard up. Like, how many times do you walk over, like, I don't know, in the woods, you're walking over an animal track or something, or there's something that's there. Well, if you take a cast of it and you really post it up on a wall or something, that art sells for thousands of dollars. Someone saw something beautiful and something you just stepped right over. And it's like, some of us don't pay attention to those minor details. I mean, you probably miss minor details all the time when you're just walking to work or driving to work. That could be something that could be a whole other experience for somebody else. And some people are just less guarded up. You know, and I'm probably guarded up at some points, but there's a lot of not really belief in this as much as there is a wonderment of it, if you know what I mean. I mean, what do you think about the cultural importance of the paranormal? I mean, all the TV shows that have kind of profited off of it, they do kind of run it a little extreme and kind of take it down the money rabbit hole. But I also think they play a significant importance into our society's interest in some wonderment of something else.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, I personally don't really watch any of the TV shows at the moment because my life's consumed with Coco Melon and...
I just watched the Epstein doc. What a horror.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, I won't say anything bad about what people are doing unless they're faking stuff. Then I will, you know, I will curse them. But I feel that at least it gets people involved in the field. I do think the field is saturated by a lot of people doing things for the wrong reasons. One of the big things that has come up recently is we all call it the D word, and it's not the one you're thinking of. It's demon. And a lot of these social media influencer investigators will throw out demon. Oh, if it's something potentially negative, it's a demon. It's a demon. It's a demon. They're doing that. And they'll, you know, put on their YouTube page like, oh, the demon this of this location, or I almost died from a demon. They're just doing things to get kind of clickbaity. So I think it's, you know, these TV shows and you know, the different popular investigation teams and stuff like that. If you're doing it the right way, I think it's a good thing. But I think even the ones that do it the wrong way, at least you're attracting people to the field, and potentially those people can do it the right way and really expand the field. Cause I think, you know, there's obviously energy. I don't know what it is. I have several hypotheses that I can throw out there. But I think there's definitely something there. And I think once we can identify what it is, I think it could open a lot of doors. I mean, eventually, you know, if it is, you know, the energy of the deceased, and we can with 100% accuracy say that, then, and we have equipment that's better than what we have now, because I still think we're in kind of the medieval times of the paranormal field as far as things go. I mean, we got some good companies like Ghost Stop that are coming out with, you know.
Yeah, but it's only getting worse, right? With AI and the creation of all these new technologies.
It's a bad thing.
Loved ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a bad thing because you're going to see a lot of people faking stuff. But I think as far as the actual investigators and researchers go that are really looking to identify what we're interacting with, I think if we can figure that out, I think, you know, if we're interacting with the energy of the deceased, then they could tell us who killed them if they were murdered. We could solve crimes that way. But at what point, if we are able to determine that, you know, this is energy, even if it's not of the deceased, so there's energy there and we can interact with it intelligently and we can trust it and we have it everywhere, then it's almost like a Big Brother thing. Like instead of having cameras everywhere, you just have energy that can, you know, rat you out for doing shit.
If you can't ask a dead person who killed him, I would ask OJ's wife, because I just gotta know.
I know that's definitely one.
I don't know. Yeah. She'd be like, do you even need to ask? I'm like, I guess so.
Yeah, he's you know, doing fantasy football TikToks X's. What do they call Twitter, like tweets now?
Everyone calls it Twitter still. Nobody's calling it X.
Okay. I'm not on there, so I'm not too sure.
He always starts off, hello, Twitter world. And then he'll just go into like talking about fantasy sports. And I'm like, God, just read his comments for 5 minutes. You'll have the best day of your entire life.
Oh, I know. And I know I don't really watch. I do watch podcasts. Like I obviously watch yours. I do consume some paranormal podcasts that if it's somebody that I or a group that I feel that they're doing things the right way. And I also listen to a lot of comedians podcasts. But I forget where I was going with that.
Hopefully something about OJ.
Oh, no, it was. So there's a group of they're almost like frat boys, and they came up. I heard of them through Theo Von's podcast. He's one of my favorite comedians. And he interviewed, did you ever hear the Nelk Boys?
I've heard the name.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I mean, they're kind of like a bunch of like frat boys essentially, But they one funny thing that I saw that they did, because they were talking about it on his show, is they interviewed OJ and on their podcast, and they showed up in a white Bronco the same year and everything.
I'm jealous they got to interview OJ.
Yeah, yeah. But they, I think they pissed them off showing up in the, I forget what year it was, 1995 white Bronco.
I'm sure you could piss them off doing anything, but you just
Well, he's one I wouldn't want to piss off, you know?
I'll be all right with it. I have to ask what you believe when it comes to the demonic stuff, because obviously that's a large part of our history and culture, has been this belief in more religious views on things. And obviously, if you look at the certain religious texts and what the, I think it's the manual for the Vatican, they have actual ways to produce and create an exorcism or be able to perform one. So, and they used to do that a lot back in the day. I think they're still active in it now, but they don't talk about it as much. But that is an area, obviously the demon stuff always gets mentioned when you see something that happens to do with a horror or a ghost or something on television and movies now happens to do with the more demonic stuff. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I go kind of, I'm still skeptical because my personal belief, I'm not really a religious person. I'm more agnostic, I would say. So I believe in the possibility of it.
How do we not have an app to be able to, like, someone just can put up, hey, my sister's being possessed by a demon, come check it out. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, or like, someone come help.
Like, 25 miles away, there's an exorcism going on. I'm like, awesome, and I could just drive down to it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, before I go into this, I do have to comment. It's not a podcast unless my cat takes a crap in her litter box.
Did she do it again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's scraping it up right now. I don't know if you hear it, but as far as the demonic thing goes, I mean, I believe in the possibility. I've had experiences myself. I think I told you about my first paranormal experience.
Yes.
With so obviously we did the summoning ritual and it worked. And I know that our friend got, you know, some kind of attachment to him, where he was acting like quote unquote possessed. We didn't have to do an exorcism. We just kind of smacked the shit out of him and he came out of it. And I know that Sean has talked about it. And I think Garrett has the experience at the Bel Air house, where there was a gentleman that came under the grips of what was believed to be a full possession. And they had to perform a ritual and it was essentially an exorcism ritual. But at the same time, I know in my conversations with Garrett, he doesn't feel that. He felt like the first experience that we had, where our friend came under the grips of an oppression, that was demonic because that's what we were summoning, was a demon. But at the Bel Air house, he thinks it was more a parasitic energy rather than a demonic energy that took this person. At the same time, during our investigation that we have the documentary at the Bel Air house, we also got Moloch that came through an ovulus. And Moloch is one of the seven angels that fell from heaven with Lucifer. And we've discussed that in the past as well. So I would say I take an agnostic approach with anything regarding religion. I actually take an agnostic approach in the paranormal field. I believe in cryptids, anything. I believe in the possibility that there is demonic energy. I just don't know because I don't have scientific proof of it.
What about some of the work that you're working on now that we're going to get into discussing? The new documentary, some things I wanted to get to. I'll make sure I give you enough time for that because we just kind of went on a tangent for
a minute. Yeah, no, it's fine. That's the conversation flow. That's how our podcast is set up too. It's just, it's a conversation, no set questions or
you
anything like that.
Poser. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. But, well, I'm working on a documentary. It's been taking a lot longer than usual. I've had a lot of personal stuff happening, that I don't want to get into, but, it's kind of limited my time on being able to work with it. Also, I have a little maniac toddler running around, so that kind of kind of makes things difficult too, as far as having energy to, you know, not only work on paranormal stuff, but also the audio book.
Gotta love them.
Oh, I do. I mean, being a dad's my favorite thing in the world, but, and that's my priority. So yeah, it's going to take longer to do the documentary. Plus I've been getting better at editing. So I feel like this is probably, as far as evidence goes,
couldn't have gotten any worse, my friend.
It's up to par.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know. Well, some of them were really.
You had some really good ones. I really liked it. Every single one you've showed me so far, and then some of the ones I've seen on my own. I mean, you do a very good job editing those videos.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty raw. And this one's still going to be pretty raw. I will say it's a little better because the lighting, like we're doing IR lights, which helps out with just the visuals. I'm also editing more on the audio side. So with that, I know there's some paranormal teams that'll will warp the audio a little bit, where they'll, you know, change the pitch or something like that. I don't do any of that. All I do is I turn up the volume. If a response is coming through like the spirit box, or if a knock happens in the room, I'll turn up the volume so the viewer can hear it. Or, you know, I'll turn down the volume on the spirit box when there's no responses coming through. I started doing that because I found that, you know, with the other documentaries, a lot of the times people will tell me like, I don't hear it. And I'm like, well, that's because like I'm listening to it using headphones. If you put headphones on, you'll hear the responses, you know, a lot more clear. So I wanted to do it for the, you know, the casual viewer, just to, you know, turn it up. So, and, you know, turn the noise down a little bit. So I'm using that was a project.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
When you get done and I think you should add clips into the documentary where you're actually talking to the people that investigated it with you about what they experienced, and then just add those in certain moments leading up to the scene, like how most paranormal shows do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of clips. It's kind of hard in this one because, so the documentary itself, I was investigating an antique store in Jennerstown, PA by myself. And
Hobby Lobby?
No, it's called 1806 because it was.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Sean, Troy, Phil, and then Troy's daughter were investigating Indiana State Sanitarium at the same time. So the clips that I'm using are more. I think it was like 6 months after the investigation at 1806, I went and interviewed the owners and the house historian. And actually I was kind of happy with it. Cause I told them one of the biggest things in the paranormal field is people call it paranormal, cause everyone's always serious and all that, you know, it gets boring. So I told them like, hey, be yourselves. And if you want to be funny, be funny. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we will be. And some of the stuff that they say is just hilarious. I've actually tried to write the narrations a little more detailed than the prior documentaries in my voice. So I'm adding humor while also in-depth theory or hypothesis. So I think it's going to be a little more entertaining than the other ones. The editing's going to be a lot better. It's still not going to be perfect. It's still going to be raw. It's still going to be more evidence-based than anything. But I think the analysis is going to be a little more consumable, just because there is going to be humorous elements to it, because I'm writing it as if I'm writing it, where in the prior ones, I felt like I just wanted to just be a serious analyzer, if that makes sense.
It does. Are you trying to really represent to anybody out there that would not be a paranormal researcher, but just kind of try and pull back to Hollywood from it and really look at like, this is like, I mean, you're doing, even with the public stuff that you're doing, you're really trying to show people, or at least spark up an interest, but at the same time, just tell them like, this is like what's questionable. This is like, not like on the TV, you're not going to get the fun stuff, but you're going to get the more, you know, something could happen, but it's really just the realest stuff possible, just so you see what people can experience and what there is to really kind of look at when we're talking about paranormal experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that this release is going to be more on the scientific side. So it still has paranormal elements to it. But yeah, I would say that's my main goal. My main goal in all of this is to try to figure out what we're interacting with. It's not to, I mean, it'd be awesome to get a TV show, but it's going to be a boring one. Probably. I mean, the good thing is, though, with our team, we're pretty much like we're all pretty humorous. We all really jab each other and stuff. And we do that even during investigations. So it's not serious all the time. And I think that helps with our, you know, releases, because it does show our personalities, where I think a lot of the TV shows out there, they don't. They're just there to investigate. And I feel you get better responses that way, where it's like you're treating the energy as if you're talking to one of your friends, rather than like, hey, move this item. Did you kill this person? I mean, there's still elements of that, but it's also, you know, we're trying to project ourselves to the energy. And, you know, a lot of us are just, I always say, humorous dickheads. So we add that to it. And I think that makes, you know, a lot of the energy respond better, because it's more authentic to them as well. Because a lot of these locations, I mean, let's say it is, you know, ghosts or spirits. A lot of these investigation teams, they go in there, they ask the same questions over and over again. Like, if it is spirits, like, I'd be like, I just told the last jagoffs that were in here, like, I already answered that question. I'm not answering it for you.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of helps as well. And like you said, it's not the, oh my God, what's that noise? Oh my God, look at that. It's more of an authentic approach.
Out of all the location, Luke, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and more, I would say, scientific and research based, because I feel a lot of the shows, they don't really go into that. A lot of it is more ghost hunting, where it's like, oh, look what we got.
Out of all the places that you have visited, which out of the however many total really had something going on there? Because obviously some of these locations that you have to pay a good sum of money to be able to go and explore. I'm just curious if you're able to pick up more paranormal stuff at locations than you couldn't.
I think it's a timing thing. So I will say, you know, Hillview Manor is probably one that has been more interactive. But a lot of it too is, do you have time to analyze every investigation? I have a backlog of investigations that I haven't analyzed anything yet. So a lot of the stuff that you capture in authentic investigations, you're not hearing it live. So a lot of it is you're seeing it during the review, like, holy shit, this happened. And that's where a lot of the evidence happens, is during the review, because it's, you're not realizing it. And that's the same with, well, like we talked about earlier, I had said, I think paranormal stuff's happening all the time. It's just, we're not witnessing it. We're not putting a digital voice recorder in our car as we're driving down the highway. So we don't know. There might be something sitting in your car, you know, interacting with you, and you just don't know to look for it. I would say that we've never been shut out at a location. I know one of the big things in the documentary coming out is when they were at Indiana State Sanitarium, they didn't really get too much. And I wanted to show that, because a lot of people, like all these TV shows, it's always all this evidence. They never show the times where it's like, we don't really have much interaction, because people aren't going to want to watch it. So I kind of show that a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't get any evidence, but they did get, it wasn't a lot. But then we went back to Indiana State Sanitarium during the convention, and we had a plethora of stuff going on. So I don't necessarily think one place is haunted more than the other. I just think it's a matter of timing. I think it's also a matter of different variables. Like we were talking about earlier, if you think there's astrological or astronomical elements, elementals, you know, what, you know, is it raining or lightning or is it sunny? Is, you know, energy responds to different things. And I think a big thing is it responds to the energy that you bring. So I think that, I don't think you can, you know, say one place is more active than another, without kind of factoring in, you know, timing and different variables.
How has your perspective changed since you first started researching compared to where you're at now? Do you have any concrete areas that you just feel like are more solidified in your mind?
I mean, I maybe not more solidified. I would say I have more questions. I came into this, I think I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years now. I came into it having one paranormal experience in my life. And that was the ritual that we did when I was 19. And that was like terrifying. So I never really wanted to venture into it. But I would say going into it, I was more on the ghost hunting side, where it was, I want to interact with something. I want something to interact with me. And I want to capture it and look at it. And, you know, eventually I would say
something grabs your crotch and then
yeah. I mean, at that point I was in the investigation mode. I actually have an elaboration on that, because we went back to the Monroe house and I figured out who it was. Unfortunately, my camera, which was old reliable, completely crapped the bed. I do have two video cameras going, but the one main one that I use, which has the best audio and visual, crapped the bed during that investigation. So I don't think I'll be able to do a full release on the Monroe house, but I did get further elaboration on the entity or energy that grabbed my crotch. It's
guy or girl?
It's a man named Richard.
Oh my God.
Who, he, for whatever reason, called me back down to that hole in the basement.
That's,
I didn't get my balls grabbed
shit.
This time.
That's so scary, though, because you got to think about the number of people that were abused in the basement or something like that.
Well, it's a unique place because they found human remains in that hole in the basement, and they don't know where it's tied to. There's also writings about it when it was first built that they had to remove some kind of artifact. It didn't go into detail what it was. From the ground itself to lay the foundation of the place. And that's one of the hypothesis, is that when they removed whatever that artifact was, that shot out the energy. And that's why that place is considered a negative location.
What about when we talk about the veil, or if we talk about this other plane of existence? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I want to go into detail, but I don't want to spoil, because I do talk about the veil in the documentary. I'll talk about it. What the hell?
Yeah.
So just because you're my boy, Robbie, we'll go into detail.
Yeah.
So
that's why you wish people happy birthday on Facebook. I'll tell you that much. Nice.
I'm a good guy when it comes to the birthday Facebook posts. But as far as the veil goes, a lot of people think that there's an energy border that kind of blocks the paranormal energy or supernatural energy from the humans. And nobody really knows what it is. So I elaborated on a spirit box hit that Troy got at Indiana State Sanitarium, where it was during the day. He's walking around doing a spirit box session, and it says, "It's night." And it makes me think, you know, all right, if there is a veil, is the veil not really a wall, but it's possibly like a wall or a vortex of time itself? Because that's one thing us and also Garrett's group, Celestial Oddities Paraseekers, he started that group back up again. We're trying to figure out what kind of perspective the energy has. Like, are they able to see us, or is it fragmented, like us seeing them, or, you know, us hearing them? Is it all in like little fragments, or can they hear us completely? And I think there's a time element, because I don't know what time they're seeing. Are they seeing the time where they're alive? Are they able to realize, hey, I'm dead, and, you know, supposedly, if it is the energy of the deceased, and I know I'm cognitive that it is currently 2024. Also, are they evolving? Because that was one thing. It is kind of weird to think about, because a lot of people talk about child entities, and I've interacted with child entities. Do they remain as a child the entire time in their realm, or is time forever evolving? And when, and, you know, they could also evolve in their form as well. So are they aging? If someone dies, this is a common question and it's really hard to answer. If someone dies at the age of 80, are they going to come back at the age of 80? Or are they going to come back in the age 30? Or are they going to come back as a child? Are they able to evolve over their lifespan? And then on the flip side, if a child or a baby passes away, and supposedly, you know, if you are under the belief that we're interacting with the energy of the deceased, does that baby grow up on a hypothetical time scale that we're interacting, we're able to interact with them as if they were what they would have been if they would have survived and became an adult? And with the veil, is it that they're, since it's fragmented and everything's fragmented as they're coming through, this entity said it's night. Is it possible that it is night in that realm and it's coming through time itself instead of a veil? Like the veil is time. And it kind of coincides with like a potential multiverse theory, where not necessarily that it's like Spider-Man where there's different variations of people, but it's more of a, you know, these spirits or energies on a different time scale than us. So it is 1862 where they're at, but they're coming through at 2024. So they're kind of almost time traveling through.
If you had a bunch of plots on a clear see-through map, and then you place it on top of an actual map, the lines are just being added, but you can take that layer off whenever you want and you'll have your original map still. So if it's Earth, if it's this timeline, the other timeline that just gets placed on top, or the veil that gets placed on top, it's not actually a part of the original timeline or whichever timeline we're on. It's just another layer that is added to the mix. And there's times maybe when it's stronger and there's times maybe when it's weaker, where most of the time it might be weaker, where we can't perceive certain things. But sometimes you get those cracks in the map that eventually leak through and you have locations that are haunted or other random things. I don't necessarily believe that they're just in isolated spots. You know what I mean? I believe it would probably be more free range, but I just believe they're tied to certain locations. But I believe you can probably see that whole area. You know, you see shows where there's like hauntings on bridges and things of that sort. I believe they're connected to the spot, but I also believe that some of that stuff just gets attached to your person at a point. Like you probably bring some of that energy home.
Yeah, we've had attachments. But I like how you describe that, where there is this alternate timeline, but it's not affecting our timeline. Because then if you would think about it, if it was from the same timeline, it's just 1806 is that timeline is colliding with our timeline, then would we be able to manipulate the past to change the future? So I like how you kind of separated that, where it is a different almost universe or dimension, but it's a timeline from the past, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like you can't touch anything back then and be able to affect the future. It's just something that just somehow the wires are crossed. There's not really a whole lot of interaction. They can interact with us, maybe in a sense, depending on the power. But most of the time you hear about these paranormal experiences, there's necessarily not any. Most of the stuff is people doing it to themselves. You know what I mean? Like it, whether it's a trip or whether it's a fall, whether it's a freak out, whether it's something like that. But sometimes you get something where someone feels like they were touched. I'm like, yeah, but does that affect it to where you can't use your arm anymore? Like it's not permanent. It's just something that happens. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like one thing I was explained to by a paranormal researcher. That'll be an episode that after this is released, it'll be a little bit before. But he mentioned, he's like, there's some things, like you ever been driving really fast on a road and something just tells you slow down or you're not going to make this turn or something. You call it self-doubt, but it's like an instinctual thing. You know what I mean? Like it's happened before, like with a car accident, you know, someone's driving kind of weird in front of you and your instinct or something just tells you, like a voice in your head, slow down, this person's going to wreck. And then there's an accident that happens. And it was the exact, your instincts were right on that. We do not know how to scientifically explain that besides rational thinking or maybe subconsciously something goes on. So I wonder about those old instincts that we have as people that we tend to forget, you know, those abilities of use it or lose it type things. I mean, we would be in a whole other timeline if we really looked at the ancient history of things, of still conjuring things and trying to do magic spells all the time. I mean, if we would have spent more time focusing that as a society, where would we be? I mean, we'd still be doing sacrifices and things of this sort to make it rain. And global warming wouldn't be that big of a problem.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that and that's going back to us, trying to expand on the field. Maybe we don't know what potential there is with interacting with this energy. We don't. And I do, and that's one thing that attracts me to it is I want to figure out what it is, and I want to be able to figure out how we can potentially use it in, modern day applications. And is it possible that we could avoid, certain things? I mean, the Industrial Revolution, I don't think we could have avoided using this energy, but is there other things that we could avoid in the future? Even the emergence of AI being, or the necessity of AI, is it possible that that wouldn't be a requirement anymore if we can just harbor the natural energy of our Earth?
What about whose toes it steps on when you start exploring areas like this? Obviously, you'll have like Christian people that might get upset depending, but everyone has their own viewpoints of the paranormal. But I wonder, like, there's not a harm to me in looking into it, but there's obviously some people or some groups that might be affected by it. Like, I think a lot of it boils down to, like, if you would believe aliens exist, or if you look at the whole alien subject, that's controversial because then it kind of questions the existence of God. If we were made in the image of God, then who made them, you know? And it's not trying to disbelieve or say this is wrong, but I wonder what the paranormal kind of questions. I think depending on where you stand by it, a lot of people want to believe their loved ones are in a heaven somewhere, but it might be more rational to think that they might just be energy that just dissipates and some of that energy gets imprinted on a certain spot or certain area.
Yeah, and I mean that's a common one is a lot of religious denominations. So I mean not even denominations, just religious people. Because even I mean Phil was a hardcore Christian and he's investigating. So I do have a coworker that's a hardcore Christian and he says it's the devil's work. So it's that's a common one is the religious people criticizing what we do. Another one is if we're under the belief that we're interacting with the deceased, sometimes you can run into family members of the deceased or supposed deceased individuals. So that's a line where if you're releasing, a documentary, you kind of have to make sure that you interact with the family before you release something that could, do damage. Especially if you're gonna try to figure out who murdered someone or something to that extent. And we don't know what we're interacting with, but if you go to a scene where there was a murder that occurred, that was unsolved, and you do a spirit box session and they say, oh, it was, Jeff, whatever, that, cut this woman's head off. And then you release that and say, hey, we solved this. It was this Jeff guy that was a, one of the many suspects. It could have negative, impact on not just Jeff, but his family as well, especially if you have a huge following, because people are going to start looking like, oh, we can't say it was Jeff because we don't know what we're interacting with or what, these paranormal people are doing, but it's kind of weird. And that's another element, or people just don't want to have their relatives' names associated with it. There's a big respect factor when it comes to the families, especially if you're investigating like Crescent Sanatorium. It was open till I think 2013. So they're very weary when people are releasing things, just because you don't a lot of the family's still in the area of these people. They have one ward where there was a lot of suicides that happened, and people can get EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, of names of people that committed suicide, and you just have to be that's a fine line of, you know, not just morality, but also just respect in general to the people. So you run into that. It also depends on how you're investigating. A lot of people do an urban exploring element. I do that to an extent, but I don't go on private property, at least knowingly. So there's an element of that where you have to be respectful to the property owner. I know that I won't go into detail on who it is or the location, but there's one of our friends that owns a location had a very, very, very huge popular group, paranormal group that I think they're the biggest jagoffs ever. I'll tell you who it is off air because you probably heard of them. They came to this person's location and they didn't realize that there were cameras at the location and they were doing a lot of disrespectful things to the equipment that they borrowed and to the location in general. And they got called out and it was a huge thing. The property owner was getting, you know, threats and stuff from people that follow this group, and the group was getting hate, which I think they should, because, you know, in general, they're, you know, the social media type, in my opinion, and they're all about the clicks, and I feel like they're kind of just douchebags in general. But that's another thing. You really have to make sure that you're not only being respectful to the person, the property, but also the history of the location, because you don't want to give out, you don't want to misinterpret the history, and then you put something out there and then, you know, it turns out you got your facts wrong.
What about the ancient stuff that I was mentioning earlier? I mean, you think with all that material that we have on just ancient spells and spirits and this kind of cultural thing that goes in there, why would that be so hard to believe? You know, if we have so many depictions of an afterlife in so many various ways and in cultures that had no communication with each other, it makes you really question, you know, were they onto something?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this theory is true or hypothesis is true, but, and I don't remember who even told me this, but a lot of the religions, kind of the different religions, branched out from some happening that occurred. And I think it was in the Middle East, at least the major religions. And it was always, you know, then, you know, the religions went on their separate ways and, you know, went through their own supply chains throughout the world. And, you know, it was based on people's interpretations. I feel in general, as far as like the religion goes, I feel that they've always been established as a moral compass for civilizations, which is a good thing. But the bad thing is their interpretation is different from another interpretation. So they do battle. So I definitely think something happened at one point, and that the people that witnessed that happening, you know, they interpreted it in different ways and then went throughout, you know, scattered throughout the world and spread the word of their interpretation of what happened. And a lot of that, their interpretations is this happened and this was God, or this was another being. Or in some cases, you know, there's a hypothesis that the aliens built the temples of Egypt. Maybe there was an extraterrestrial aspect and they were worshipped as gods. So it's hard to kind of put a finger down on what happened to develop, or for these different civilizations to develop this aspect of God, because we don't know what their God, what they're referring to. You know, we have prophets like Jesus, Buddha, and they tell their stories as, you know, Jesus is the son of God. But, you know, he's telling this story and it's his perspective and these people are believing him.
But they're all perceiving something that isn't there.
Exactly.
Like, why do you feel it when someone stares at you? You know, someone's staring at you, which is like a sense you get. But everyone and every culture has this perception or understanding of what spirits are, but really it's based on the fact that they have a belief in something that you cannot see, but you can feel.
Yeah.
That's a weird question.
It really is. It's hard to even pinpoint. It's almost like what's the meaning of life, but it's weird that they, I mean, if you think of a civilization that is just developing, an old civilization that just developed the ability to free think, and then something happens, or even if there's a free thinker within the civilization that's more intelligent than everybody else, can that person manipulate them to not only be for them to perceive that person as their leader, but as their god? Just like, what's his name? I'm going to butcher it. I think it was Xerxes.
I thought you were going to mention Christopher Columbus being able to predict the lunar eclipse when he met the Native Americans.
No. But
you ever hear about that?
No, I didn't.
When he came over, he actually somehow timed it, I guess, right. I guess they were so good at star mapping, he was able to tell when the stars were aligned. But he said, like, you guys must bow down to me and give me your offerings and stuff because I'm God. And he literally convinced all these Native Americans because he just predicted when the solar eclipse or whatever eclipse was going to happen. And it happened when he said it was going to happen. And all these people just were like, holy shit, he's God. Like, don't question him. He made the sun go dark.
Yeah. I mean, even in, Empire Strikes Back, C-3PO, Luke uses the Force to have him float up, and the Ewoks worship him as a god after that.
Exactly.
So it really depends.
God, if we can go back to the 1800s, dude, I would fucking rule them.
Oh, I know. Or, even further back.
Look, I
as
can make
long as...
my thumb pop off my other. move the thumb back
exactly.
And forth.
Exactly. So it's a matter of perception. But it is unique that it always ties back to a higher being. And is there really a higher being, or is it just the perception of something as a higher being?
Well, if you examine Christopher Columbus doing that to Native Americans, you're looking at the same being, but one on a higher intelligence scale. Whatever we replaced with, I mean, science is basically magic. You can put two chemicals in a bottle and a reaction happens and a bunch of foam comes out of a bottle that you mix these chemicals in. But then you examine something like spirits or any of these types of things. I mean, wishes, genies, then you got God that just becomes the explainable for things you can't explain. Science now tries to pinpoint those unexplainable things. But if you talk about why does this happen? Well, it's science. Oh, okay. So that has now taken that and adopted that form, which makes me question. I mean, if there was conclusive evidence, 100% factual, and everyone got on board that there is a paranormal side to life, and there isn't a question about does it exist or not, there's none of that. It's here's the factual, and now everyone's in agreement that there's a paranormal, ghosts are real. What would that do to society?
Well, I think looking at it differently would be the way to do it. Instead of looking at it as ghosts are real, let's look at it as energy is real.
Yeah, but if
energy.
Ghosts are real, does that mean heaven's real?
Well, it depends on what type of ghosts, I guess, if you want to go down that road.
It's like The Simpsons, where everybody, the dome goes over the city, and then everybody just runs from the bar and the churches, and they just switch.
Yeah. No, I think that if you're under the belief that it is, energy of the deceased, I would say that it's not, a lot of people think of a soul. I don't think it would necessarily be the soul of the deceased person. I think it's just a fragment of their energy. And I think that's why a lot of the tools that we use, it may just be the technology that we're, point that we're at in the paranormal field, but it could also be that the energy is just the fragment of, say a person dies and their energy shoots out and their essence goes to heaven, hell, whatever you believe in. But, parts of that energy also disperse. And that could be why George haunts Hillview Manor, because part of his energy dispersed and just a fragment of it went to Hillview Manor. And it's just enough that you can intelligently interact with him, but it's not his full essence. It's just a little piece of his being, his energy. So I don't think it would be like Beetlejuice, where, you know, they sign, you know, have to go through through line and the lines to, you know, get the book of conduct for afterlife. I would think that it would be more of just energy disbursement, even if it is, you know, of the deceased.
What have you learned through doing your podcast and being involved more with the research community when it comes to the paranormal? I mean, you're hearing a lot of experiences and people's own perception on things. I mean, do you feel more comfort in it knowing that there's obviously a lot more people out there that believe in these things as well too?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the big thing with, especially with the podcast and just talking to different groups. I mean, Garrett and I have hour long conversations, all the time, about different theories. Cause I'll tell him, you know, I told him about my experiment and, you know, I was actually on his podcast and, I was telling them about the experiment and his, co-host, they actually are taking a hiatus from the show. But his co-host said, well, when you do that, instead of just saying, you know, Mamma Mia into the corner three times, before you do that, try to think in your head and project a, you know, environment that is in your corner, project like its own little world there. And then when you're saying Mamma Mia, you're shooting it into that world. And, you know, try to focus more on that in particular, and you may get a better result because you're manifesting a pocket that energy and that verbiage that you're shooting out there can go into. There was that. I mean, we also pick up new techniques, whether it's in theory. We had, I don't remember the gentleman's name. I'd love to give him a shout out because he was amazing on one of our episodes. He tests, because I question these all the time, but he tests the phone apps because there's a lot of ghost, you know, spirit phone apps out there. And Sean and I always debate about it because Sean's, you know, Sean questions everything too, obviously. We all do. But he is a big proponent of the phone apps. But I always question them because I always think, like, you know, I have a coworker, it's the same one that, you know, is the religious one that judges me for doing this stuff. He's obsessed with reality TV and he talks about The Challenge all the time. And I never watched the show. I never even heard of it until I talked to him. I guess it's a road rules, you know, real world thing that these, you know, 40 something year olds go on there and do physical challenges and shit. But he'll talk about it. And my phone, you know, your phone's always listening. I'll start getting advertisements on my phone and on my computer about The Challenge. And I'm like, oh my God, why the fuck did you have to talk about it? How do we know those apps that are, you know, running the spirit apps are not using the same technology that's already built into the phone to listen, to even track where you're at? And they know, okay, well, they may have a pre-programmed database of locations. I doubt they're that elaborate, but you never know. So that's why I always question them. And this guy came in and he kind of gave us recommendations on which phone apps that he's tested that, and he does like scientific experiments with them using, like, because a lot of the phone apps will read like electromagnetic force and they'll have barometers on them and different things. And he'll test it using, you know, he'll take the electromagnetic force app and go next to a microwave and turn it on and see how it responds to that microwave.
What about battery drainage?
You mean during an investigation?
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely happens. Yeah.
Okay. What was that? How'd you explain that?
I think that it's, again, it's energy. It's feeding off your energy. It's feeding off it. And I think the more energy that you bring into a location, the more responses you're going to get, because that energy, you're adding energy to the existing energy of the location. One of the other experiments I've been doing, and I'm trying to kind of tailor it a little bit. I got some stuff off Temu that I can use to, try to, expand on it. But, one of the things
like
I do,
T-Mobile for cows. What is Temu?
Oh, Temu is like, the Chinese version of Amazon where everything is dirt cheap, but the quality is not really that great.
Oh shit. I know what you're talking about. Like $3 it says, and then you put like 20 of them in your cart and it's not what you ordered.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's insane what you get off there, but there's a lot of good really cheap things that you can use in unique ways in the paranormal field. So I've been getting a lot of magnets because I believe that magnetic energy is a big thing with what we're interacting with. And one of the things we've been doing is I have a metal like container and I put a fan in it. And what we do is we run EMF pumps, like electromagnetic force pumps, in the magnetic container. We have a couple magnets that we were using and we put a tarp over it. Let it run for, you know, it's just pumping electromagnetic force underneath that tarp. The tarp's holding that all that energy in there. And then when we're ready to do a session, I usually wait about 30 minutes. I take the tarp off, turn the fan on, and just energy just goes everywhere. And like the first time we did it at the Bel Air House, and you could literally hear like a sizzle in the air from the energy was so charged. But my initial goal in doing the experiment was I also had a light that was hanging from the ceiling that projected a blue light because it has the most intense light wave frequency. And the goal was to have something manifest over that fan. But the unfortunate part is, you know, the fan was too powerful and it just shot the energy throughout the room. But we still got an awesome response because there was so much energy throughout the room. But I'm trying to do it a different way where we can have that energy in a concentrated location and try to see if we can, you know, not necessarily force a manifestation, but really encourage it by just having almost like that food for the energy, the paranormal energy, just sitting there, just waiting. And see if we can encourage a manifestation.
Just because I still have a belief factor, obviously, I don't want to come off as a complete skeptic or anything. But when you talk about chemical fires, things that you can't perceive, but it's like an invisible, you know, that Ricky Bobby talked about, I'm on fire, Tom Cruise, that's real. That's based off an actual, if you look up footage of it, there's an old race that happened like in the 90s and a bunch of people are getting out of their car and like acting like they were on fire. And it was because it was a chemical fire. You can't see those. Your eyes physically can't perceive. It's not like a flame. But if you put up something that detects heat, it comes off and you got to actually shut off all light and you'll be able to see it. It's a light blue flame. And these guys were covered in it and they're like freaking out and people are sitting there trying to fire extinguish them and they can't see it. Can't turn the sun out when it's daylight and you're racing. So, I mean, those are just things our eyes can't perceive. We have to use technology to be able to find. So, you know, I mean, that's a big weight into the argument of another perception or something that we really can't perceive when it comes to another, whether it's a timeline or whether it's whatever you want to say.
Yeah. No, and I agree. That's why we try different techniques to see if we can, you know, a different method will work. Obviously, I don't know what I'm switching up is I'm doing the same container. I'm eliminating the fan. We're going to pump the energy, have a tarp over it. But I also bought tarping that we can put around it, clear tarping, so that the energy can be concentrated almost in like a tubular form. And I have more magnets that are going to be down at the bottom of the base to kind of pull the energy towards the bottom. But then I'm also going to have, I got to develop something that I can hang additional magnets from the top of the tubular form. And so it kind of just has that energy concentrated there and just see, like, it can something manifest in there? And if we have the proper lighting, I really believe it would be blue just because the frequency is higher. But it could, you know, I could be wrong. It could be red. It could be something else. So we're going to have to try different methods to see if it's possible to have something show itself.
And is there anything else you'd like to touch upon, Mikey, before we wrap it up?
Not as far as theory goes. I would just say just a shameless plug. We Bump into Night Society. You can find us on TikTok if it still exists in a couple months. We also have YouTube. We have a podcast on there that Sean and I host every other week. You know, I got the documentary that's hopefully going to come out at some point, you know, in the next couple months. We have a convention that we're hosting in Pittsburgh, Specters of the Spring. I believe that's April 27th. We're going to have vendors there as well as a public hunt or, you know, investigation of one of the local libraries in Pittsburgh that night. We have 20 tickets, I think. I think two may have already sold. We have a lot of publics going on that we're, you know, hosting throughout the year. And yeah, that's about it. I don't know. Just also, hi. I'm working on a book of inebriation.
What is that? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was during the pandemic. My cousin and one of my friends, we were going to develop a website and we were going to have a weekly blog where I have my own stories where, you know, from college and high school where I did a lot of stupid shit while inebriated. You know, like I said, 5 years sober now, but
I'll say most people do stupid shit when they're inebriated.
I know. And that's what I did. I actually interviewed people about their stories. And then I would write a story based on that interview. Obviously, you know, I had to create my own dialogue, but a lot of them I would also create a theme to. Like one of the stories is a gentleman told me he almost got arrested 3 times in one day. I don't know how fabricated the story was because some of the shit was absolutely ridiculous. But I added the theme element each time he interacted with an officer. It was like the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. So every time he interacted with an officer, he would think back, like, how did I get here? Oh, you know, what am I doing now, the next officer? And then what's my future going to be? But it's very humorous. The book itself, the print version's done, but I want to release both at the same time. So it's a big undertaking because I'm doing a lot of the voices and sound effects myself. It's not, the audiobook's not going to be just me reading it. It's going to be the actual voices, the actual dialogue, narration. I even do female voices, which is very difficult because I have a deep voice. And I just make noises in my basement, and those would be the sound effects. So it's almost like an old school radio type of thing. But I want to release both because I want to have the audio book available when the print's done so that I can have a QR code in the print version that will, you know, when a person buys the print version, there will be the QR code to cross sell the audio version.
Why don't you get a girl voice actor to do the voice parts?
Nah, dude, I can do it myself. It's funnier that way.
Give me your girl voice.
I can't do it right now.
Come on.
No, because I also use the editing software to make it, you know, change the pitch. I do it in that. I don't do it when I'm doing paranormal stuff because I feel like that could be manipulating, you know, your results. But I do it in this case because
if you got a good girl voice, then go the easiest route, which is just do phone sex operator, and you would be making bank, my friend.
I actually thought of that. There was an advertisement when I first moved to Pittsburgh for a sex phone operator, and they wanted a male one. And I was like, man, I can do this. But it didn't pay shit. I forget what the pay was, but it was
it was
not sustainable.
Those people are doing a service to the Americas.
I know.
I bet you they get called more than the suicide helpline.
Probably. But yeah, I mean, that's what I'm working on at the moment. Besides that, just doing, you know, doing dad things.
Well, I appreciate the time, Mikey. It's always been a pleasure chatting with you again. I also hope TikTok doesn't get banned, mostly because, you know what? I don't know, because I fell asleep with it open the other day for like 7 hours, and I woke up and I was like, oh my God, what did you guys get from me?
Yeah. I don't even have the TikTok app. I don't use it, but
I use it because I need to make clips, and that's the best software I can think of for my phone to make clips.
Yeah, Jen's the TikTok queen of our team. She's the one that handles a lot of the social media, so she's good at it. It's not my thing. I'm just more of a, you know, I just want to talk to dead folks, if that's what you believe in.
I get it. I'm going to link all your links in the description, Mikey. It's been a pleasure chatting with you again, my friend. And thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank. Stay tuned for our next episode.